Welcome to Wax Heffel, episode 139. I'm your host, Wax, here as always with my co-host, Ads. Also, producer Keith, goddammit, fucked up the pronunciation already. Producer Keith doing whatever he does. Drifting in and out, listening, not listening, whatever he wants to do. All right, Ads, what's up? How you feeling?
I'm good. I'm on my, like, not my alcohol sobriety. I'm not doing, like, dry January or something. But, you know, I'm not drinking unless there's a reason to drink.
Okay. So that little sobriety break in this December, it like stuck. It's continuing to go, basically.
Yeah. So like I went to, the reason we didn't have a pod last week is because I went to a onsen town.
I saw.
And I did drink then. I drank a bit of sake, like the local specialty sake.
Yeah, but that was classy drinking. That's classy, exactly. That doesn't count.
But other than that, I haven't drunk at home. Even though I have four beers ready to sitting in my cabinet.
Can I ask you? This is a left turn. It's only slightly related, but your parents don't drink, right?
No.
You're okay. Got it. Because I was gonna. Okay. Neither of you. Okay. Never mind. This is unapplicable to either of you. So maybe we shouldn't talk about it. Because I was gonna ask, like, when did you start, like, social drinking with your parents or your family in, like, in these occasions? Then I realized that these are completely unapplicable to you guys. So maybe I should just drop it.
No, can't comment on that. But yeah, so the onsen was nice. It was good. Yeah. The thing about onsen towns, right, is, you know, if you are coming to Japan and, you know, you're like, oh, I really want to go to an onsen. And assuming you don't go to, like, a local essentially a bathhouse in like Tokyo City or Osaka or wherever you mainly go, you're going to be traveling a fair distance. You know, these towns aren't, for the most part, aren't as well connected by public transport as Tokyo or Osaka.
May I ask, when people say onsen in Japan, is it assumed naturally these are like the outdoor ones, like the kind of like the ones you see in like anime and movies? Are they all 100% those?
No. I feel like onsen's kind of interchangeably used for like the kind of bathhouses too.
Exactly. It's an indoor bathhouse and they have like hot spring water pumped in, right? Like you can only call it onsen, I think, if the water comes from a natural spring and it's like naturally heated. But like they're not all, like, from what I understand, they're not all like outdoorsy and like, you know, this kind of, you know that imagery you get from like from weeb stuff, right? You're saying some of it's like that, but not always.
Well, an onsen can be indoors, but it has to have like water from like the earth or whatever. You know, I mean, it can't just be heated up water.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Like, as long as it's natural spring water that's heated by the earth, it doesn't necessarily have to be this sort of like what we see in media, where it's like this rock pool, basically. You know,
that's what people imagine. Exactly, but if you're a foreigner coming to Japan, that's what you want, right?
That's what you want. Yeah, that's what you want.
That's what you're expecting. So, you know, right, there are like...
You don't care about the medicinal qualities of the water. You want the ambiance.
Yeah, that's just bullshit anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, it's funny. They always give you the like pamphlet, right? And they say the last one said like you can cure up to 200 ailments and diseases. And I'm just like, there's no like... false advertising or like over here, like, dude, you know,
this is another tangent, but like reading like tourism signs in like East Asia is like hilarious, because like they don't pretend to be objective. You're supposed to write it in like the most like bombastic, ridiculous way possible. It's just what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's just kind of crazy. So yeah, so onsens, if you are going to come to Japan and you want to go to a decent one, expect to travel, you know, expect to be traveling a decent amount of time. Like a lot of my friends, they want to go to the onsens in the ones that like ask me for advice on like Japan travel. They want to go to the onsens usually like the best ones for an average Japan trip, assuming you haven't been to Japan a bunch of times and like don't have any like prerequisite of like, oh, I want to visit like all the tourist areas, right? The best ones for like tourists first time is probably like Hakone, because it's in between Tokyo and Osaka. If you're on your way from Tokyo or on your way from Osaka, you can easily stop there. So those ones are pretty decently, you know. But again, you know, you're going to spend time there. And for the most part, and Hakone is a tourist area in and of itself, but where the ryokans are might not be. There's not a lot to do in the onsen towns, right? They're essentially just a bunch of ryokans or hotels, and the point of it is to stay in your ryokan, right? Like, they feed you breakfast, they feed you dinner. You know, you're supposed to stay in there the whole time. It's basically a spa retreat kind of thing.
Yeah. But unlike this, like, do they have other spa-ish things there? Like, can you get, like, I don't know, like a massage or something? Like, what else do they have
there? Some places do massages, yeah. One, I think the one we just went to didn't, but I think the one before it did.
See, here's, like, not the dilemma, but the kind of the question is, so you go there, and you're in the bath, like, how long are you even in the bath, right?
Yeah, you can't stay, like, it's so hot, like, it's, you know, you can't stay there for more, like, 20 minutes. Maybe if you're, like, a seasoned onsen person, you can push it to, like, 30. The first time I went to an onsen, I was out in and out after, like, 10 minutes. I was like, oof, starting to feel wheezy.
Yeah, I'm not, like, an onsen like, enjoyer or, like, a sauna enjoyer, but I know that even people who like it, like, they only stay in those for, like, an hour or so. So what are you doing for the rest of your day is kind of the question.
Well...
So what are you doing for this? What did you do for the rest of your day, I guess, is the question.
So during the day, you go out to the, like, tourist part of town, and you don't come back until, like, around dinner time, right? Like, until the sun sets.
Right. But and as you, like, said, the tourist part of town might suck because it's, like, middle of no fucking nowhere. There's a chance that it'll be, like, enough.
So the whole part, this place is called Ikaho Onsen. The whole shtick of it is they've got these steps, 365 steps. Absolute bullshit, by the way. They don't count the steps until like 20 or 30 steps up, so that it's perfectly 365. It's so funny. I laughed so hard at that. But essentially, it's supposed to represent, like, every step you take. It's like you're getting good luck for that day. So if you do the whole thing, you get good luck for the year. And, you know, people tend to take photos with their birth step. So wherever their birthday is, the step. And then there's a shrine, and there's, you know, little stores and stalls and stuff where you can get stuff like that. But for the most part, it was kind of dead because of New Year's. A lot of the places were opening up the next day. Like, they were still closed for New Year's.
And I'm assuming this is one of those things where it's like, if you've seen one shrine, you've kind of seen, I don't want to say all, but you've seen a lot of them.
For the most part, you know, like, people say, oh, you know, like, when I go to Japan, I want to see all these shrines and stuff. And, you know, I like shrines. Yeah. I like temples. It's cool. But, you know, people, you know, you always get a bit of temple-itis, right? Like, we've just seen so many temples. Right. They all, like, kind of blend together.
100% understand because my parents love temples, and they love learning about, like, all of the things that make each one different. And, like, I just couldn't care less.
Yeah, people care about that, or you care about the historical part of it. But for the most part, a lot of those aren't going to be translated into English, right? So I guess you could, like, try and Google translate the Japanese writing. It won't be perfect, but, you know, you get a good gist of it. And, you know, like, every shrine is dedicated to something and stuff like that. But for the most part, that area is essentially just, you know, the steps, little stores and stalls. And that's about it. So, you know, we came around, you know, noon, tried to get lunch. It was ridiculously hard to get lunch because every store was closed, which meant the ones that weren't closed were just, like, 2-hour waiting list for stuff. So we ended up walking to a konbini and just having a konbini lunch. And even that was hard because everyone else had the same problem and just had a konbini lunch as well.
You know what? You know what? That means you had the most authentic experience. The most authentic.
Exactly.
Come on.
Exactly. And, you know, we had some old Japanese people talk to us. You know, they talk to me. They always start talking to me first because I'm like, out of the three people there, I'm the most obviously foreign. I had my girlfriend with me, and my other friend was there as well. Happened to be there at the same time, and she's also.
Let me ask you about that, because, like, I think we've touched on this before about, like, the reluctance of Japanese people to talk to foreigners, depending on their age group and, like, you know, where they are. So young people in the cities
never talk to you. They'll never talk to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Old people in the middle of nowhere, they're like, oh, it's a foreigner. let's practice our, do they try to speak to you in English? Or,
No. They never try to speak English. No, never.
Okay.
It's always in Japanese.
In any case, they're intrigued. Yeah. They were intrigued by the foreigner. So do you have a good talk? I feel like your skill at the... I feel like your skill at this must be pretty decent by now, because it's happened like a decent number of times.
Yeah, so I don't get it as many times as my other friend, who's, you know, she's a woman, she's visibly, I mean, I guess, you know, for Japanese people, they might think I'm white as well. You know, Keith will have his opinion on that. But she gets it like even when I'm with her, like, she gets stopped and talked to by every old person. Every old person wants to talk to her. Maybe she just looks friendly, and I don't. I'm not sure.
Does she look friendly? Does she look friendly?
She does look pretty friendly, yes. Okay. So the thing is, we started talking, and then my girlfriend comes out of the...
Oh, sorry. This is another question. Is she like very like small and unassuming?
No.
Okay, that's interesting.
She's quite tall. I say she's about my height.
All right. I like theories about... I have theories about like whether people want to talk to like physically unintimidating people, or like, I don't know. There's some weird stuff going on, I feel, how people treat this.
Yeah, for sure. So what was I going to say? Oh, so I'm talking to her. Then my girlfriend comes out of the konbini, and, you know, I was like, oh, like, I'm from, she asked me like, where are you from? Like, I'm from Australia, and she's from America. And they always have the same response. They're like, huh? American? Like, you're American? Honto, like, because you don't look American. They're the image of an American. Right. And I'm like, guess what, guys? America isn't a fucking homogenous culture.
You should have said she's from Texas. They would be even more surprised.
So the funny thing is, right, this happened to my girlfriend multiple times. And it's funny, because then they're like, oh, like, your parents moved to America, right? And she's like, yeah, kind of, sort of, you know? Okay, I guess so. A long time ago.
It's just generally a talk that, like, oh, man, do we have to have this talk?
Yeah, it happens to her a lot. Like, they always assume either she's Japanese or half Japanese or something like that. So it's not funny to see, like, not funny, haha, but like, it's omoshiroi. It's interesting, I guess, to see that stuff. And then they were talking to me, and then my other friend came out, and I'm like, oh, she's from Australia too. And they're like, what? Mm-hmm. I know, she's Asian Chinese Australian. So yeah, it was just you know, fun times. Overall, the town was kind of boring. The other thing was, I didn't drive there. Because I was worried about snow. It didn't, and that was the other thing. I only wanted to come to this onsen because I wanted to see snow. Like, I wanted to have, the last time I went to an onsen, it wasn't snowing, and I was like, oh, I really want to get like the, you know, the prototypical, like, oh, anime.
Oh yeah, onsen, yeah, exactly. Snow. Yeah, you're in a rocky pool and there's snow around you. It's
exactly
very,
that's very what I was aesthetic. Looking for. Yeah, that aesthetic, right? It didn't even snow. I could have definitely driven my car up. It actually snowed here, where I am, very lightly. Like, snow is like kind of a loose term. It snowed and then basically instantly melted, right? Yesterday, for the first time this year, or the first time this winter. So I didn't get that either. So it was a bit of a disappointing trip overall in terms of like what I wanted to happen. And because I didn't have my car, I couldn't drive around to like other places around it, because I took the train and then caught a taxi.
Did you feel bad because this was like one of the few stereotypically Japanese things you would do? Because generally you avoid trying to do the stereotype things, but the one time you do it, it was kind of not that great.
Yeah, it felt like I still enjoyed myself for sure. Like the actual like onsen, like we got a private onsen. The room was pretty nice. You know, the food was good, but the last place was better. Like, if I had to rate the two places, because for me, the hard thing is whenever I go to ryokans, right, is I'm vegetarian, right? For the most part, they don't do vegetarian meals. So you have to look for specific hotels that do vegetarian meals or vegan meals. Usually they just do vegan. So that limits my options.
Oh, interesting. I'm surprised that that's how it splits in terms of like, I mean, is that specifically oriented to foreigners, you think?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, it is. Okay. Then that makes sense too, I guess.
So like my options are limited, you know. I can't go to every single onsen town. Like the most famous onsen town in Gunma is called Kusatsu Onsen. And it's probably I can go there for like a day trip, right? I go there and I can like hire out an onsen for the day, or like enter an onsen for, you know, like 1,000 yen or whatever it is, like $10. But I can't stay at a ryokan because there's nothing to eat there. For the most part, everybody eats at their like ryokans. So there's not a lot of food out, like out and about the town.
Right.
Because what's the point? Like everyone else is, or if there is food, they only open for lunch, where, you know, you have to get lunch somewhere else if you're staying at a ryokan because they don't feed you lunch.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's the limiting factor for me. Do I, like, I've been to two ryokans now. Do I like say like, oh, I'm an onsen believer? Not particularly. I think it's cool. It's fine, whatever. But, you know, it is something you should experience once. So I often go with my girlfriend and we don't really want to split up. Like, be like, oh, I'll go to the girls and I'll go to the guys one. So we usually get a private onsen. Either, you know, you can rent one.
I forget that's a thing. That's, yeah, of course, you have to be divided. Yeah.
So either we hire out like a private reservation of one of the onsens in the place, or mm-hmm. you can get an onsen, like onsen in your room, like a bath mm-hmm. in your room. And that's what we got both times. Maybe next time we won't do that and we'll just like reserve an onsen for an hour or whatever. Because like you said, like there's only so much time you can spend in onsen. So really, like what do we do? Like spend 20 minutes in there before dinner, 20 minutes after dinner, and then 20 minutes in the morning. And that's about it, right? Yeah. And you're kind of paying a premium for the best room, right? Because only the best rooms have private onsen.
Right. All right. So overall, would you say onsen culture, Japan, overrated, underrated, properly rated?
By foreigners, probably a little bit overrated. Okay. You know, like for me, if a foreigner was telling me like, oh, like, you know, one of my bucket list things to do in Japan is I want to go to an onsen. And they were like to me, oh, yeah, like, do you have any recommendations? I'd be like, first off, how many days are you staying? Second off, is this your first time in Japan? Like, if you're staying in Japan for a week, are you really going to put 2 days away, like, out of your trip just to go see an onsen, be in an onsen for like an hour and then like do nothing, like stay in a hotel, a regular style hotel? It's kind of a fucking waste of your time, right? If you're there for 2 weeks and it's like your second time in Japan or something like that, they can be like, you know what? Yeah, like here are my recommendations. Like go to these places. And the other thing is a lot of these towns, a lot of the places I've been to, like the first one, they had very good English. It was kind of funny. Right. First one, it was full Japanese staff, pretty good English. This time, I had a foreigner, there was a foreigner working there. And she was the one that was serving us our dinner. And I thought, oh, like they gave the foreigner to us because as far as I could tell, we were the only foreigners. Maybe there were like other Asian foreigners in there. Mm-hmm. But as far as I could tell, at like dinner time, we were the only foreigners. And they gave, like she was serving us our food and she was talking to us in Japanese as well. And I was like, well, what was the point of giving us the foreigner then? She was going to talk to us in Japanese anyways. Found that funny.
Maybe she realized that like she knows that you guys don't want to be pandered to. Maybe she her experienced foreigners like they get offended when they're given a foreigner. She's actually being very considerate toward you.
That's what I thought about.
Was your Japanese very good? How was your Japanese?
It was really good.
It was better than yours. Yeah. Okay. So it was like way better.
Yeah. For sure. Better than mine.
Yeah, okay, so she knew what was going on, I feel like.
So yeah, the problem is my girlfriend's pretty good at Japanese, but she's an absolute idiot when it comes to food. She doesn't know any like vegetables names or fruits names. Anything.
You have to know because you can't eat anything otherwise, right? You have to know everything.
Yeah, like so in terms of like vegetables and fruits and stuff and meat, I'm probably like close to her level in Japanese for that specific subset of information. Okay. She's no help there.
So you would actually say that even though both Mount Fuji climb and onsen are overrated, the Mount Fuji climb, at least it's better than the onsen because you know what you're doing all day. At least like it's the schedule isn't an issue.
Would
you say so?
Like if somebody told me, oh, I want to climb Mount Fuji or I want to do onsen, but I can't do both. Dude, I'd say onsen every time. What the fuck?
Oh, because it's not miserable?
It's not miserable. Like, why would you want to be miserable on your holiday? Like, if you're like a person who's like, oh, I love climbing mountains. I've climbed like all these fucking mountains across the world. I'd be like, you know what? Like, you seem like you're down for the being miserable. You know what I mean? Like, you enjoy being miserable on a climb.
But I feel like this is you being your most like toxic masculine in terms of like, oh, you know, like, you, like everyone else is like a sissy and not tough enough, but even though it was like rough and miserable, I actually enjoyed it. I feel like that's sort of the way you're pushing them out. What do you think?
No. That's wrong.
That's how it feels.
Did I tell you I'm climbing Mount Fuji again?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, yeah, you told us, and that's why I think like the way you talk about it is like you keep saying I wouldn't recommend anyone else, but like, if you're like me and you're like rugged like me, I'm going to do it twice.
The only reason I'm doing it twice is because my girlfriend and her mum are forcing me.
I don't know. I feel like the way you talked about it, though, you've not talked. It was not unambiguously like negative. You said it sucked, and at the end, you're like, it was fine.
So there's still one thing missing. It was kind of cloudy the day we climbed it. I didn't get my proper sunrise from Mount Fuji. Yeah. So that's a reason to climb again. Okay. But what I'm saying is I'm saying if you're the average person who like, you know, does a bit of hiking every year, you know, around summertime, they, you know, you do some casual hiking, you know, go, you know, do a couple hours of hiking. That person, like, why would you spend that time in Japan if you have a little bit amount of time in Japan on Mount Fuji? No, like, onsen's a better use of your time. You're going to enjoy yourself for more of that time. And you're going to experience some part of Japan. Like, what are you experiencing on Mount Fuji? Nothing.
I would argue that both are, like, equally, like, Japanese in terms of, like, legitimacy. Like, come on, like...
No. How many...
I'm not saying everywhere, but you can find volcanic water in like places. Like it's not like only Japan. You can find it in like Iceland and like Finland,
New Zealand,
and parts of America. Yeah, exactly. It's not like a super rare thing.
You can find fucking mountains Korea, everywhere.
Like... Yeah, but it's like the mountain, isn't it? It's like the
You could go somewhere and see the mountain. I'm not saying don't go to Mount Fuji and see it. Do that. Don't fucking climb it.
Which mountain is like blessed by the fake Shinto gods? Come on.
Dude, the Shinto gods are everywhere. They're everything. So everything's blessed by the Shinto gods.
Yeah, but I thought, like, isn't Mount Fuji, like, special or some shit in that regard?
Yeah, it was. But you know, there are plenty of other mountains that are special in Japan.
All right. In any case. All right, so conclusion.
You're coming to Japan... if you're coming to Japan and in the summer, you're stupid. Don't come to Japan in the summer. It's terrible.
Of course.
In which case, and at the same time, if you're coming to Japan in the summer, then Mount Fuji is better because I wouldn't want to go to an onsen when it's so fucking hot already. I guess climb Mount Fuji. If you're coming to Japan in the winter, climbing Mount Fuji isn't an option. Go do the onsen. Come in the winter anyways. Come in winter or autumn, both good times. It's not too cold in Japan. Like if you're from Australia, maybe you'll feel a bit cold, but if you're from pretty much anywhere else in the world, for the most part, it's a pretty mild winter, especially this year's winter. It's pretty mild. How cold is it in New York right now, Wax?
Let me check my pocket phone.
Oh, it's quite warm. It's dropping tomorrow.
Yeah, it's been a pretty mild winter. Like we haven't had snow yet, so basically this is like an insanely mild winter. It's been very very comfy, to be honest. But you can't rely on that. It's like a year by year thing. Like
in all the
snowy countries, it's always year by year. It's like, oh, maybe it'll be like hell like. Maybe it'll be pretty pretty nice.
Tokyo Osaka weather is warmer, like by a lot warmer than New York, right? Like a couple on average it's warmer and it doesn't get as cold either.
For sure.
It's warmer during the day, it doesn't get colder at night. So yeah, like for Japan in the winter, it's whatever. And the tourist places for most of the part don't really snow. Like Tokyo doesn't snow, Osaka doesn't snow. So you don't really need to worry about that stuff either.
All right. So that's the conclusion. I don't know if we learned anything, but in any case.
Okay, let's jump into more Japan topics. Let's keep it Japan.
What a great segue. So natural.
Yeah, so speaking of Japan, Japan's had a rough start to the year. We had the earthquake, a few other things happened. There was stabbing on the Yamanote line, another stabbing on another line.
What the fuck? There were stabbings? What the fuck happened?
Yeah, some lady stabbed some random men because she hates men or something like that. I can't remember what was her reason.
Was it one of those like shitty stabbings where someone takes like a knife that's not even that big and just like pokes people and they bleed, but no one dies. Is it one of
those? I don't know. I didn't see the
you know, but you know what I'm talking about.
Tsundere like covered in blood meme. So I assume it wasn't that interesting.
But you know what I'm talking about, right? You know, in Asia, you have those kind of stabbings where people want to stab people, but they don't want to kill people. You know what I'm talking about.
Sure, maybe. No one died, as far as I know, on either. The main one that I know, no one died. The other one, I'm not sure.
Yeah. She was bad at stabbing, probably didn't want to kill someone. Whatever, she's going to be jail forever because it's Japan. Anyway.
Yep. So she stabbed a couple people. There was the earthquake. I can't remember what the earthquake's current death toll is. Yeah. It was quite large. There was some...
pretty bad.
Fires. It's pretty bad. The Japanese government is being really... Mm-hmm. Is being smashed right now over its reaction to the earthquake, and it's
really why. What was different this time? They deal with this shit all the time.
I think they underestimated how bad it was, and a lot of people underestimated how bad it was because at the start there wasn't a lot of
I see.
So yeah, they didn't send enough aid, and then on top of that, people got angry at the whole which we're about to talk about, the Japan Airlines fiasco, which is kind of related to the earthquake, right? So I think there's been brewing anger at the Japanese government for a while now over a bunch of topics, like the shooting of former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, and the whole fiasco with the Korean cult.
Oh wait, what happened? I thought the assassin won, and they passed all these laws to basically like make it so this cult can't operate anymore. Did that
basically, not happen? Yeah, but that also opened up like other connections from other politicians to that cult, and those people were like being pressured to stand down. And then on top of that, then they found like misuse of funds by a bunch of people. So basically, the Japan Prime Minister's having a rough time, and I doubt he lasted the year really. Which you know isn't that unsurprising. Japan's prime minister seem to switch very often, and there's essentially only one party and just multiple factions of that party. And it depends which faction that party gets power tells you much about Japan. But there's no opposition basically in Japan, so it doesn't matter.
Anyway, to the topic.
Japan having bad start to the year. The topic is Japan Airlines. There was a crash on the 4th of January, I think it was.
First week, whatever. Yeah, it was recent.
In the first week, there was a air crash involving a Japan Airlines a domestic flight, basically full, coming from Sapporo. It was landing, and another plane, which was a Coast Guard plane, which was taking resources and, you know, food and other supplies to the earthquake area, was on the runway, and as far as we can tell,
we don't know exactly what happened yet, but yeah,
you know, it hasn't been confirmed, but by the looks of it, it appears as though the Coast Guard had misunderstood the information given to them, and went onto the runway when they should have been taxiing off the runway, and caused a collision. 5 out of 6 of the Coast Guard people died. Yep. No, there were no casualties. A huge fire occurred on the Japan Airlines flight, and essentially engulfed the entire plane in flames. And it was kind of the pictures and the videos are kind of crazy of like how quickly it happened and how severe the fire was. Mainly because what Japan Airlines was doing. This is, you know, New Year's rush, so people are finishing their holidays. They're going back home and they're coming. Back to work or whatever. So all these flights are full, and to save money, instead of flying smaller planes, they fly huge planes, fill them up with fuel and keep going back and forth so they don't have to stop on refuels. So this flight was full of fuel.
Yeah,
so that's essentially why the flight was like so, the fire was so intense. Within 15 minutes, I think, all passengers disembarked, only a few light injuries on the Japan Airlines flight. 5 out of 6 on the Coast Guard passed, and the pilot was very severely injured, as far as I could tell. And yeah, people were on Twitter, you know, there were a lot of posts from people on the flight, and people were praising the Japan Airlines flight crew for getting people off so quickly. They were praising the usual Japan, wow, Japan. praising Japanese people for being so fast on, you know, so cooperative.
It was one of those things where, like, there's no counterfactual, right? Like, you don't know what would happen in a different country, but because the best thing happened, people are like, oh, it must be, well, obviously you congratulate people because the best outcome happened. But then you immediately go on to, the best outcome only happened because of Japan. And you're like, okay, we can't say that's not true, but we also can't say that is true, right? Anyway, sorry, I interrupted your thought.
So, so that's basically what I was going to. A lot of people praise Japanese culture and, you know, the whole collectivist society, the usual, you know, hallmarks of, you know, what we like to praise Asian countries for. But here's the thing, right? And, you know, great job, as far as we can tell. You know, this has happened in a bunch of countries, right? Similar things have had to happen where, you know, you've had to disembark the plane very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, it seems to have worked out. But, you know, not the exact same situation with a fire and, like, this huge problems, like, so obvious, you know, it's so obvious that had we stayed any longer, like, people would have died, right? Like,
right.
It's not that obvious. But so to come back to it, so my girlfriend and I were discussing this, and she said, she brought up a good point about, you know, do you remember the boat sinking in Korea?
Oh, yeah, Sewol, yeah.
Yeah, so that boat sinking had a completely different take on it by foreign media and Western media, in that due to the collectivist nature of Korea, I don't know about this, she brought it out.
Yeah, I don't know about this either, but yeah.
Nature of Korean society, people basically dawdled around, and that's why everybody drowned.
Oh, it's because like they didn't like run up and just try to get out there. Oh, you know, people will take this.
The
authorities will take care of this.
Trust of authority. Yeah, they had a trust in authority, and that's why that's why everybody drowned.
And the authorities were actually not. Yeah, they were actually incompetent. Okay.
Yeah, incompetent. Unlike in Japan, in the Japan situation where. You know, the thing is, right, like on airlines, it's kind of crazy how well trained airlines are, like airline staff are into these situations. Mm-hmm. Like by far, airline travel is like the safest in the world. It's even safer than trains, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's like the accident rate is like, I don't know. It's like something ridiculous. Per millions.
If you take out like small aircrafts, it's essentially zero. Like, that's how low
your
chance of dying. Like, if you take out, like, all the small aircraft, those are the predominant causes of death, right? Like, small private aircraft flown by, essentially, you know, hobby pilots. You know, those aircrafts, if we exclude them and we only focus on, you know, jet planes and aviation for commercial purposes, it's essentially zero. Like, your chance of dying on a flight is almost zero. Mm-hmm. So it's crazy how well-oiled the whole process is, right? The planes are so... are built from like the best materials possible for the most part. You know, there are mistakes, you know, but for the most part, there are very few mistakes happening on the planes. The, you know, the pilots are well trained, extremely well trained. The cabin crew are extremely well trained. You know, all this stuff is drilled into them. So for the most part, you know, different comparisons, right? But it's kind of interesting to see both, you know, like, oh, because of the collectivist society, this one worked well. And, oh, because of the collectivist society, this one worked poorly and everyone died. And I'm just like, interesting. Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is if everybody died, you know, if everybody had died, would everyone have been like, see, if they were Americans, they would have pushed and they would have opened that emergency exit open and they would have jumped out, they wouldn't have waited for it, you know, everyone would have been like pushing to live, you know, but if because it was Japan or because it was Korea, everyone was just waiting for the, you know, aircraft people to like help them escape. So interesting take. I was intrigued by it, and I told my girlfriend that this kind of a joke, not really a joke, it's because all the weebs are old now. Japanese culture has been dominant in like you know, not quite dominant, but like has been in popular culture for so long that all these people who are writing these articles love Japan. But we need the K-pop stands to reach that critical mass and be in these jobs where they love Korea so much that they'll find excuses for Korea too. That's what I told her should happen. So we just need 10 to 15 more years and Korea will be in the same spot.
I mean, so again, I feel like credible journalists don't actually say that in articles. Say, hey, like, you know, this happened because the Japanese people have some sort of civic spirit. But it's sort of the thing that happens on Twitter, right? It's like the social, it's sort of like the discourse where it happens, and it's like, but the funny thing here is that like. It's like I know, like from our point of view, like we see it as a cringy. It's like, hey, you don't know. You're basically just conjecturing and like painting people with a certain brush. And this could easily, like, the negative side of this is basically what you see, like the kind of xenophobia and racism. It's like, oh, this won't happen because these people are like uncivilized and like disorderly. So like, I don't know. That's why I always cringe when I see it, because like it's so easily like we can flip
it's, from one side to another.
But I think like the more like problematic, but the reason why it doesn't go away is because when it's positive stereotypes, the people lean into it so hard. The people from that country, they lean into it so hard. Because like I don't know if you've like noticed in Japan, but like at least I feel like I've seen it on like okay, so preface, Twitter isn't real, but going on Japan Twitter, I feel like I've seen a decent amount of like people being like, oh, you know, like it's like a point of national pride that they were able like. That this happened in Japan, is it not? Like that it went over so non-disastrously. Well, what do real people think? As someone who's in the real world, not on Twitter, ads, tell me how are people treating this?
So I had a very slight discussion with a couple of teachers about it, and they were talking, you know, like, oh, you know, they were commenting about like the kind of like disastrous start that Japan had to the year. And we were talking about the flight, and they didn't lean into it particularly, but they said like, oh, like, you know, everybody, you know, somebody made a comment essentially saying like, oh, like everybody was calm, and you know, thankfully they mainly talked about, you know, the cabin crew more so than the people. Mm-hmm. So it was mainly the people. Yeah. It would have been funny to see, because this was a domestic flight from Hokkaido to Haneda. It'd been funny to see an international flight where there were other national. I'm sure there were a few people who weren't Japanese, but for the most part, like, that was probably a heavily Japanese domestic flight. It wouldn't be funny to hear, but yeah, I don't think they made none of them like really commented on like, oh, everybody was calm and this is the Japanese way.
Okay.
If anything, Japanese people only make that comment when it's somebody not doing the Japanese way. I feel like they do it more so when someone isn't doing it. More so than when they do it, because Japanese people think it's an expectation. It's you don't need to say it.
Okay.
So they only say it when it doesn't happen.
Ah, okay. That is a little bit different from like my experience in Korea, because I feel like in Korea it's just pervasive in terms of like the cultural undertone of like, oh, you know, this good thing happened because of like some sort of like. Quality of Korean culture or the Korean people, and I always have to cringe when I see that, because like I know the flip side is always like lurking there. It's like, oh, and then you're gonna say like this is why like country X can't achieve it because their people are like lazy or uneducated or whatever. So it's like whenever I see it, the association in my mind is always very wary. I don't know. I feel like this is just a wax origin story thing. Is that like wax thinks nationalism is very stupid because I grew up in America and Korea. And my experience was like, oh man, all of this is incredibly moronic. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Do you think do you think Korean people are particularly nationalistic?
Yeah, but
Do you think it's because every Korean man has to have go through the military process?
No, that's the other funny thing, because like the attitude to military in Korea is so funny, because like no one's proud of it. No one's proud of it. Everyone says it's a giant waste of time. Like no one's proud of serving. It's just like they think it's just they know it's like a necessary evil, but no one like takes like some sort of like nationalistic pride in it. All the nationalistic pride is from like it was none of it's in the military. I would say you'd have to be like a really super hard like right winger to think that way.
So basically, unlike America, where most people take a lot of pride in like serving the military, it's the opposite in Korea. Because everyone does it, what's the point of having pride in it? That makes sense. That makes sense.
I would say the general attitude is apathetic, leading negative. Is what I would say.
That makes sense. So I think in Japan, people are nationalistic for sure. But in like kind of an apathetic nationalism kind of way. Yeah. For the most part, unless you're like super old, Japanese people, you know, aren't like, oh, they all think Japan's the best, but it's not like it's not in the same way like Americans. You know, no one's flying the flag. So something, just a slight tangent, right? So whenever they do, so I was researching this topic a long time about Japanese culture, especially when the there was a big push from a couple of unions in Japan, like workers unions in Japan. There was a couple of especially important events happening in the union space in Japan, and there was also a couple of things in my job, ALT slash, you know, assistant language teacher job with unions and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I was researching about that, and I found out that actually the Japanese teachers union was one of the strongest unions in Japan for a very long time, and it's also one of the most left wing unions in Japan.
I think we talked about this in a previous pod about like how Japan before, like up until like the 70s and 80s, was considered to be like very left leaning slash socialist in certain quarters.
Yeah, so for example, one of the big pushes that Japanese teachers unions were trying to push towards was to not have to sing the Japanese anthem, the Japanese national anthem, and not have to bow to during opening and closing ceremonies, and not have to bow
anthem when? In school, you mean, or just in society in general?
Yeah, in schools.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. Oh, let me ask, is that a thing now or not?
Yes, it is.
It is? Oh, when do you sing it?
We didn't sing it in elementary school, but I think it's sung in junior high schools.
But I'm like, how often? Like, is it, like when?
Opening and closing ceremonies.
Of what?
Every semester. So twice a year. Twice a semester.
Oh, twice a year.
Twice a semester. Twice a year. So seven times a year.
Okay. I don't know how it is right now in like in Korea, but it was like, I think it was like once a week in like Korea. Like every time we did the assembly, basically, it was involved. So it was like at least once a week, at least.
Yeah. So that thing, and nowadays, so when they go up for the opening ceremonies or closing ceremony events, when you go up the stage, you're supposed to bow to the flag. But the funny thing is, right now, is like the flag's not even there, but they still do it. They still bow to nothing.
To what?
Like, the flag's not there. To nothing. There's nothing there.
You bow to like a non-existent like entity, basically. Okay.
Yeah, essentially. And I just found that interesting. It's kind of like,
Okay. I feel like this all ties into Korea because like a lot of Korean ritual and like that kind of stuff actually comes from colonial Japan. So a lot of it is just like Korea, like imitating what Japan used to do in the past. But it's kind of interesting to see like which customs have actually like outlasted the colonial era and they're still being practiced now.
Yeah. So I wanted to go through this. Some of the biggest critical stances were against the Kimigayo, the national anthem, the flag of Japan, and the screening of history textbooks. So they didn't want that to happen. And you know, there was a big push by the Japanese government to basically tear apart this teachers union, and you know, they created teachers efficiency rating systems, which they could use as an excuse to fire militant teachers. There was a lot of stuff done to like basically bring this apart. And also the union's now closer to like Japanese society, I guess it's kind of like dead basically. But yeah, so that's something that I discovered a lot about. In Japan, I found it interesting, but yeah, for the most part, do Japanese people are Japanese people like outwardly, what's the word I'm looking for? Outwardly nationalistic.
Nationalistic.
In the same way that like you perceive like Western people to be outwardly nationalistic, not particularly, I'd say, not in the same way, but they are. It's not like they aren't. Right. They are, right. But it's not the same way.
Yeah. They don't have to say they're better because they know they're better.
Damn, I just read the Japanese national anthem. It's kind of crazy.
You read the lyrics?
Yeah, I read the lyrics.
Okay, what's crazy about them?
So it is His Imperial Majesty's reign. That's the translation for the Japanese And it says essentially like, oh, may your reign continue for 1,000, 8,000 generations until the tiny pebbles grow into massive boulders lush with moss.
Okay. And? So, Wait, isn't God Save the Queen kind of like that? Or am I like, do I not know anything about England? And
it essentially is, yeah. Never heard that one too. I hate that one.
Yeah, so I'm like, isn't that kind of the same? Like, it's not that weird for countries that like monarchies, no?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not that strange, I guess. Damn, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Wait. What's the Australian anthem? I think we talked about this. The one where like back in the day, you guys wanted to change it. This was topic once.
So at one point, the Australian anthem was "God Save the Queen" / "God Save the King."
Yeah.
Then right. There was a national referendum to change it. The current one is it's kind of boring. Sorry, what'd you say? Oh.
Yeah, you wanted to change it to like some what the fuck was it? Some kind of like popular folks, not folk song, but something like that.
Yeah, popular folk songs were part of it. Yeah, and it was the second most popular one. It was Waltzing Matilda. I don't know if you know it.
No. This was a topic. I remember talking about this one.
Yeah. It was very close to being the national anthem of Australia. But yeah. So yeah, in general, in Japan. People talked about it, you know, positively, but I think overall there's been an extremely negative wave of publicity around. You know, everyone's like very thankful everybody lived, but there's been a negative, a negative wave of sentiment around the Japanese government right now for a variety of reasons.
Bad vibes in society.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll see what happens. Nothing's gonna happen because Japan's essentially a one party state. So,
yeah,
kinda sad. But
all right, cool. I have nothing more to say about this. Next topic.
All right, next topic.
I'll pick, I guess. Okay, so let's talk about T1 for the second straight week because I don't know why not. Why not give ads some joy?
Yeah, let's go. Tell me what happened. Right.
All right, so correct me if I'm wrong, but are T1 fans more loyal and crazy than ever before? Like, what is it? 10? Well, I mean, since the LOL team, 10 years since the foundation, like almost 20 years. Because it's not just that. Because I've noticed since the World Championship win, obviously the fans are very happy with the win, but I felt like something that's changed. Since previous seasons of T1, back in the day, people seem to be very attached to T1 organization, and maybe Faker as a singular player. But I feel like this iteration of the team, it's the iteration of the team that's receiving the most, what I would say, is like idol-like support, where people, they love the group, but they're extremely attached to this iteration to the degree that I feel like changing the roster would be difficult, or it would come with like a lot of fan blowback. So, ads. Was it always this way and I've never been paying attention? People have always loved the team and been in love with all the members? Or is there actually something special about this iteration of the team that is inspiring an unusual amount of loyalty?
I don't think that it's something... I think it's something that the team has pushed more recently and over time has pushed it. You know, there was the infamous... Oh, T1 does too many events where our schedule is so jam packed. Do you remember that whole issue?
Where it's not changed.
Complained about it.
It hasn't changed at all. Yeah, exactly. It's not changed.
Like I don't know if you kept up with like the amount of events that T1 have done since the end of Worlds, but it's kind of insane.
They've had no break. Yeah, I know they've basically had no break.
I don't know. So I think the T1 organization has been really pushing the team. You know, they did the meetups with Korean K-pop groups. They do like T1 Con. Like, I don't think any other organization does something like that.
Right. But T1 Con's been happening for like, this is the second year, I think. Okay, maybe this is the second year. So
yeah, which is exactly lines up right with the whole the team. So and the other thing is, for the most part, teams don't stay together as long as this T1 team. It's been the same roster for 3 years, coming into its third year. And even before that, a lot of these players were in and around the team before that, right? So, like, Ona and Gumayushi were like subs.
Yeah, Guma was like, he's been with T1 like four years now.
He was coming in and out in that last Teddy year, right?
Yeah.
So he's been around. So I think, you know, once you have these players for that long, and obviously Faker, right? Faker's his own entity. Let's not even talk about Faker just yet.
Well, so he's always the Rock. Yeah. Faker doesn't matter here because for this discussion, because he's always the Rock. What I'm speaking about is like people are they feel like they're super attached to this iteration of the team, which is like I feel like I haven't noticed it before, and like I'm trying to figure out, is this fandom evolving? Is T1 doing better marketing? What's changed? Because I feel like no one really cared that people cared that Marin left, people cared that like Wolf left, people cared that like Huni left, but not to this degree. Like, you know, I feel like if Caria left now, you would see like literal crying fangirls, like it's a K-pop group. Like, I think people would cry.
I think that's happened before to some extent, but not to some extent. Yeah. So what's the reason? I think it's the better marketing from this T1 team. They've pushed that angle, right? They've pushed this concept of basically almost the boy band archetype, right?
Yeah. Right. The strategy has. Although I feel like that's like a little bit chicken and egg, because like when I look at T1 Twitter, I feel like this is sort of like who caused it. Like, did they see the fans doing this and lean in, or like did they do it and the fans leaned in? I feel like my opinion from having watched Korean esports for a long time is that the fans will do this naturally, and all you have to do is lean in. So I think this is more of like the fans started it. Because
I think T1 didn't invent it, right? Like, this team isn't the first. You've got the Rocks Tigers, right?
Yeah.
But the Rocks Tigers also leaned into the idol.
Yeah, and they could just never keep it together. But this iteration of T1 marketing team seems to have leaned in further than others have in the past.
Yeah, so I think that's the real reason we've seen this. And I think we are nearing, what would you call it, like, we've passed mass critical of like LOL probably as an esport, right? Like we are on the downward slope more particularly in the West, but in Korea and China. Now LOL was the biggest esport in Korea by far. It's the biggest esport in China, probably.
Still is. Still is in Korea.
Still is. And they still are. But you know, now we're like, well, this is the best it's going to be, right? So people are becoming more attached to the idea of like, oh, like I have to really, really, what's the word? Like, not love these not last few years. I'm being a bit dramatic, right? But I have to be super attached to this.
Appreciate these golden years.
Appreciative of these years, because this is the best it's ever going to be.
Wait, you really think that like the K-pop-y, like the... Because I hate to make like a super like big gender distinction here, but that's kind of what it is, right? Like there's a like this group leans very female, of like these like people that T1 Con is made for a female audience for the most part. Like that's like incontrovertible. Do you think these people care about the long term industry? Like, don't you think do you think K-pop fans look at a band and like say, I have to appreciate every moment because I don't know when this band's going to blow up? Maybe at some like very, at some very existential dread level they do. But I don't notice that as like a thing in K-pop culture, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think this is you being like a sort of like a esports industry cynic. Yeah. And like, day-to-day fans like think about like, have this dread and have this sort of like cynicism, saying, oh, this is all going to blow up one day, so I should love it while it exists. I don't think that's how
Maybe that's just me.
Yeah, that's just you. Like, I don't think that's how fandom works in general. Fandom is like believing it'll go on forever, is it not? That's how I see fandom.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of interesting in that, like the whole T1 con, right? I didn't see... I must have missed T1 Con news, but T1 Con news was posted everywhere, mainly by you, I guess. You're the reason. Yeah. I don't go on Twitter, so.
Yeah, I know. The thing is, like, I follow T1 Twitter because, like, I don't particularly like T1, but I find T1 Twitter fascinating. And just because I enjoy, like, observing the fandom. So I just follow T1 Twitter just to see what's going on. And that's why I sort of noticed this trend of like, man, the fandom's like even is as deep as it's ever been. Like, do you know the thing where like each character, not each character, but like each player has like an animal associated with them? Have you noticed that one?
No.
So like the one of the main like foreign T1 fan Twitters has assigned each player like an animal emoji, and they always use it to like so if there's like a interview quotation, they save characters by not writing a name out. They just put the animal emoji there. So like Faker's a penguin, and like Kumaishi's a tiger. Kuma's a tiger. Someone's a bear. I forget exactly, but yeah, they've done that. And it's like such like K-pop behavior, basically. That is like, I'm pretty sure they lifted from K-pop, or I'm just saying it's such K-pop behavior, and I think it's very delightful. And I'm just trying to figure out where it came from. And again, like, as I said before, like it sort of naturally occurs. So I kind of know like it's just a naturally occurring thing. But I don't know why it's like so prevalent now with T1 compared to like 5 years ago, is what I'm saying. Because 5 years ago, yeah, it was more sports fandom-y 5 years ago, I want to say, and now it's become more K-pop fandom-y. Do you think it's because the players are just like personality-wise? Like, I don't know how deep you are. You think just like at some like, I don't want to say objective, but like objectively, do you think it's because like they have like cuter and like more interesting personalities?
It's because this generation of
T1. So, because like I'm gonna do a thing and just say. I actually think, like, objectively, it's not just like the attractiveness. I just think these guys are more interesting. Like this iteration of T1 is like the actors are way more interesting than previous iterations.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the players are willing to do stuff. Like yeah, Ona has his own thing. Ona fucking did it, like a little concert thing. Yeah. Guma has his own character.
Yeah.
Zeus and Keria are quieter, I'd say.
Yeah, but Carrie is also like he cultivated this character of being like the little brother who's also like he seems quiet on the outside, but inside he's like really like annoying. Not annoying, but you know what I mean.
Mm. Yeah, I think like you said, it matters that the team itself is more interesting than previous iterations. But that's not to say that other. I think that just the team itself, and it's come from like a high. Higher up, it's a push, right? Like the team itself is pushing.
Yeah, right. Because the other thing is like at the same time as I say, like I think these guys are just interesting personalities. It does feel like in the past they were incentivized not to show because everyone knows Huni from his like you know LEC and LCS adventures. He's a loud guy. He's very funny. Wolf
also a funny guy.
Not we know he's because he's a streamer. Like we didn't know this before he was a streamer. So maybe it's a thing where like they could have manufactured this in previous iterations, but they didn't allow it because they just preferred these guys just be quiet, stay professional, like don't reveal themselves. Maybe how it's much, a, maybe.
So how much since the SKT to T1 era? How much did the upper management change?
I mean, the upper management didn't change at all. But the thing is, like, we don't know what happened like below that, right? Because all we see is Joe Marsh do Joe Marsh things. Yeah. So. Yeah, but like,
Marsh is brand new to the organization, right? Like, he's on the top of the hierarchy, but the people below him, they didn't change. I don't know.
I'm saying like it's completely possible that all that could have changed. Like we don't see it on the outside, but like it's completely possible that on like below the surface, all that has been like changing way more than we know.
Mm-hmm. And you know, obviously the team manager had changed, and now it's coming back. I guess to a pre T1. Like old pre T1 SKT era coach with but I think it's something hard to tell, but for the most part it's something that the team has leaned into, and winning worlds has like just like exploded it, I guess. Would it have been this big if they hadn't won worlds? I don't know. Interesting. Wax is eating. No. So yeah, I don't have much more to add to this other than that. It's interesting. We'll see how the team goes this year. And that's the thing is how big T1 is in Korea, in like LCK right now. It's kind of huge, and how big Faker is.
Yeah.
You know,
people
have mentioned like, oh, if T1's playing, the viewership is 50% higher, right? And you know, if Faker's not playing, the viewership drops.
Yeah, it's like 100% difference or more. Yeah, and like I saw some poll where it's like the equivalent to the Q rating in America. You know what the Q rating is? It's just basically like a thing that just shows like how popular or like recognized you are. And I think like Faker made like the top 20 of celebrities in the celebrity group, like not counting like, you know, like politicians and stuff like that, but he's like top 20 in Korea among celebrities. So that's like, huh.
Interesting. Yeah, so we'll see how it develops over the year. I do think it matters a lot that the that the team sticks together, right? Like just having this same team. It's so rare in League of Legends that it makes it an event in and of itself.
But I think it's crazy that it's gotten to this point where like you're actually like managing like monetarily, because like for football teams, this never really happens, right? Because in football teams, the on the field product is so much primacy that it doesn't really matter. Like obviously, if you sell like a popular player,
to be fair, it's not like this team like is shit, right? Like if this team was shit, that's I really think good. People would push. There were fans calling for owner to leave the team.
Yeah, like you.
Me, I still.
Yeah, like you. But
this motherfucker's gonna live off his world's career for the rest of his life, man. It's kind of crazy.
I mean, he was pretty good at worlds. Well, he was good for like the last half of worlds.
He was
the first 40%, not so convincing, but the last 60% pretty good.
Yeah. Anyways. I have a good transition here. So I'm gonna transition unless you have something to say.
Okay, no, I was gonna say like, well, my last point was gonna be, it'll be really interesting to see if one of these guys takes a huge downturn next season, and they're actually in a dilemma situation where they have to choose between keeping it together for the fans, or changing it out for like you know for actual on the Rift reasons.
I think there's a huge chance that happens, not because of the whole stereotype that You know, once you win Worlds, it's hard to like keep that level up. Like for the most part, there are exceptions to the rule, but a lot of players drop off after winning Worlds. Yeah. There was the Worlds curse where if you won Worlds, you wouldn't make Worlds again the next year.
Right.
That was gone for a couple of years.
But I think this is an interesting situation where this is so different from traditional sports, where T1 is now a team where them making money is not necessarily connected to them being good at League of Legends. I mean, it matters, right? Like, if they're terrible for like many, many years, their fandom will go down. But at this point, they're actually in a place where, let's say,
and Manchester United. I don't know.
yeah. But the thing is, like, Manchester United is the loyalty is not connected to a certain player. You know what I mean? This, I think, it matters like who the players are. The Manchester United would like, you know, they like win. I mean, yeah, maybe they like kept a couple of guys on for longer than they should have. But it wasn't like they weren't gonna like they weren't the difference in like them winning or losing. But like, I think it'd be very interesting to see the season if like owner is like really bad, if like I don't know Zeus has a big slump, and it's sort of obvious that they're the whole, but they don't want to change him because the fans are so attached, and the way they make money is like through this sort of like K-pop adjacent business. So I'm very intrigued to see what happens.
Yeah, there's a big chance that happens.
I'll be very interested.
Because I just think it's kind of crazy how very few players have very few chances they've had to rest. So I think it's been this crazy schedule might just catch up to them.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, your transition. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Speaking of outrageous and ravenous fan bases and fandom. The late Chicago Bulls GM was booed by fans during a ceremony inducting him to the Hall of Fame, I believe.
Not Hall of Fame. The Ring of Honor. It's
Ring of Honor.
Yes,
essentially the same thing.
Yeah. Exactly. There was a ceremony to honor him. So
take it away. I need a pee, but I'll be listening to your explanation of the situation.
All right. So if you don't know, Chicago, the late Chicago Bulls general manager Jerry Krause, who was the Chicago Bulls general manager during basically the Michael Jordan era, the Dynasty Bulls era, the person who put it together. I mean, like, okay, so there's a little bit of debate in terms of like who deserves the credit for putting it together. But in any case, he was the incumbent GM during the Chicago Bulls Dynasty. And he passed, I think, in like 2000 and whatever. And it's been a while since he passed. And lately, Just this week, the Chicago Bulls decided to hold a ceremony honoring members of this team, and they inducted Krause into the Hall of Fame, into the Ring of Honor, to recognize his achievements. And what happened there was the fans. So the late Krause, obviously not there, but his widow, his wife, was there to receive the award in his honor. And what happened was, when he was announced, the fans, they booed quite noticeably, and she was shown on camera. The director made sure to give us a great shot of her being emotionally distraught at hearing the fans like boo her late husband. And this thing has been a bit of a controversy in the NBA community lately, because, so one, why were the fans booing Jerry Krause? This is because there's been drama around him since basically his. Since he was GM, like, this is like a simmering, like, 40-year long thing. He was always controversial GM. His relationships with talent and other management, not, I was gonna say talent, players, has always been sort of like controversial. So the end result, yes. So I would say, like, so end result wise, I don't want to like be the person who says whether he was great. I'm not in a position to say how good he was. But he did happen to be the one who presided over the greatest period of relevance and greatness in the NBA of the Chicago Bulls, what some would call the NBA's greatest dynasty. So, there's probably Chicago Bulls fans who have convinced themselves that he deserves zero credit for that, and I don't know if that's true or not. I'm not going to say that. But in any case, yes, this was a executive who was being honored by the team. And because he was not popular with the fans, they decided to boo.
Why wasn't he popular? He didn't touch on that yet.
So this is okay. So this is the stuff that's like hard for me to like. I'm not super into the Chicago Bulls lore, but one, he decided
just a light recap.
So this is, as far as I understand, is that he blew up the dynasty team. That's what
That's what people credit him with.
No. That's people who is his detractor would say that he was the one who disassembled it when they could have won more. And this is the thing that I'm not exactly sure what the truth is here, but apparently, like, people, he was one who, because he was a GM, right? So he can, like, you know, dictate player movements. So he was one that, after the Bulls won, like, the second repeat, he disassembled the team. And that's why people blame him. It wasn't one of these all-time great teams, and he was like, okay, it's time to rebuild, and he disassembled it, and people have never forgiven him forgiven him for that. Also,
the Bulls have been garbage ever since.
Right, but this is like, but this is the stuff where, like, I don't want to, like, legislate whether that he was right or wrong, because, like, he did some wrong things, too. Like, he wasn't perfect. No GM's perfect, his record.
But no, just saying, part of the reason why fans are, like, upset about it is because, like, they haven't won. Right, like, I feel like if they have won at some point since then, fans would have been like, they would have let some of it go.
I don't think I'm upset about him about like recent like failures. I think they're upset about him because of like he was the one who allegedly was the one who brought an end to the great 90s Bulls, because he knew the run was over and he's rebuilding.
But you don't think that if they had won any time since then, they would have let some of it go?
I would say if they were good now, they would be less inclined to boo. But because they're like so average, they're so mediocre now, it leads to the booing. But this gets to like why we're talking about this topic a little bit. Because The Last Dance, ads, you know The Last Dance, right? Documentary. Yeah, and you know that like Michael Jordan had final editorial say. He had a considerable editorial say.
Yeah,
and like a lot of it is like. Jerry Krause was dead at that time. He was dead when it was filmed, so he couldn't respond. But they basically just like let Michael Jordan shit on Jerry Krause whenever he wants, right? So you saw that, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things, this is getting like stupid journalism talk, but like, because like all the journalists back when The Last Dance came out, they were like saying, "Hey, this is very fun." But they were very concerned that letting athletes control the narrative around their careers like this could lead to like people remembering the past wrong. I feel like this might be one of the first noticeable repercussions where. So Chicago fans will tell you that they had reason to hate Jerry before this documentary, and yes, a lot of the stuff that Michael says in this documentary has been like recorded in other articles and other like articles of books. But I feel like to a large part, like that documentary led to people like having negative opinions on it, people who maybe weren't interested in history, but watched the Last Dance during the pandemic and were like, oh, Michael Jordan was great. Jerry Krause was, he sucked. And I'm going to boo him now. I mean, I feel like there must have been people like that in the crowd.
For sure. I think it's obvious that that helps fuel the animosity towards him. I thought that's what it was. And so essentially, just to recap, people blame him for breaking up the dynasty team.
We're trying to like combine like animosity and antimony.
What did I say?
I mean, you said like something else.
Did I? I meant animosity.
You said antimosity.
Did I? I don't know why I said that. Anyways, animosity was the word I was going for. So yeah, I think it's something that happens. It's not unique to the Chicago Bulls, where somebody who is a great big part of their history can be booed for whatever perceived wrong that they've done to the the team. I think the big thing is, and it's kind of crazy, right? Like, what was the video from? Was it from like the actual TV broadcast, or was it like somebody recording it at the stadium?
Oh, the video. Oh, you mean like, oh, like, so what? Yeah, the local broadcaster. Yes, the local broadcaster. I don't think this was not a national game. Like, so yeah,
this is in the stadium, right? It looks like the big screen at the stadium. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, no. Fuck. Actually, I don't know exactly, because I thought it was a local broadcast, but maybe it wasn't. But
of her is on the big screen in the stadium.
Yeah. But I'm assuming because it has graphics, I'm assuming it went out on like the local broadcast too. I'm assuming, because it has all these graphics, I'm assuming like it also went out on like on the RSN.
Okay, fair. So yeah, it's kind of crazy they just kept it on her. It's kind of sad. But yeah, I think,
yes, that's a logistical failing in terms of like, hey, like the producer should have known like Jerry Krause is not popular in Chicago and we should not do this because this might happen. Like, yes, there's like a, like sort of like a logistical failing, but I think the fundamental like thing is like, are fans like do fans suck? It's sort of the question we're trying to ask here today.
I mean, well, what do you think is the issue with this situation? Were they booing her? Because I mean, like they weren't her, but like she was shown while they were booing.
Okay, they were booing a dead man. Is what I think. Because like I think booing living people to their face is like fine. That's like that's a rite of fandom, right? That's a like a God-given undeniable right of being a fan at a live event. You can boo someone who's on stage and like alive and breathing all you want. We agree on that, right? Of like live performance, you can boo anyone unless you're like children, and then in some cases maybe you can still. So we all agree on that, right?
Mostly.
Yeah, you agree that fans are entitled to like boo basically almost any living entity on the stage. A living entity, you can boo like a man, woman, child, old person, like almost anyone, like, except extenuating circumstances, but generally speaking, if you're person on
for the most part, I think fans should never boo their own team. I think it's one of my rules. Like, if you're a former player who like left in like circumstances that were, everyone loves the, you know, like your shit cunt chant towards the player who left your team to play for another team. Everyone loves that. That's fine. But if they're a player who's playing for your team currently, regardless of how badly they paid, I think booing your own team is very classless.
Okay. So that's a minor difference in our views, I suppose. But in any case, but you agree that like, yeah, booing a dead person is like is extremely classist. That you agree on?
I don't know, man. I feel like
I think we disagree here.
Look, if I'm just saying, if they announced yo, like, this is Osama bin Laden's 10th anniversary of death. People gonna
yeah, boo Osama bin Laden? I didn't want to be that guy, but I was gonna be like, people can boo Hitler. Like,
I think people are gonna, yo, like, they'll be like, yo, so Hitler, Hall of Fame, what was his name? Fucking the guy who just died. Kissinger. He was, like, inducted into the Hall of Fame of Juventus. Right? If I was at a Juventus game, I'm fucking booing Kissinger. Fuck that motherfucker.
Wait,
fuck him and his
mom. Wait, was he? Like, what happened? Why was he inducted into the Hall of Fame of Juventus? Like, that's so random.
I don't know if it was the Hall of Fame, but they definitely, like, sent out tweets of, like, great friend of Juventus.
But why? Was he, like, a fan? That's so random.
Probably was a fan. He's a fucking fascist pig, so it makes sense. Juventus was a fascist club for a very long time, so.
Okay, that is, like, incomprehensible, but, like, I will look this up because I want to know more. That's so fucking random.
Yeah, but I think in this situation, so your issue is, like, them booing a dead guy at all. Like, they should just, like, understand what he actually did for the organization. Yes. And what they're, like, the reason that the ceremony is happening and okay, be so, grateful so, for that.
Right, okay, so accepting that your exclusions, I understand your exclusions. If these people are, like, unequivocally terrible people, then yes, you can boo dead people who are, like, mass murderers and, like, yes, but if they're, like, ambiguously dead, you probably shouldn't boo because it's classless.
So if I'm gonna blame somebody Ring of Honor and he was there, you wouldn't have a problem with them booing.
If he was alive for this ceremony,
and they showed him and they booed.
Oh yeah, no problem. That's like people booing David Stern at every draft. That's what I'm saying. Or people booing Adam Silver at every draft. That's just like standard fandom.
I would see exactly like that. I just hate, like, from as like a wrestling fan, I just I'm fine with you booing or whatever, but I don't like, as long as it doesn't go to the point of you're like going into business for yourself and hijacking the production. Like, that's when I'm like, so, like, I'm fine with booing, like, to your point, living things on stage to an extent.
Okay, I feel like your view of that is, like, also very complicated because wrestling is a thing that has an intent, whereas, like, live sports doesn't have an intent, and, like, every audience reaction is natural. Like, you should, like, I know what you're saying. Like, I think it's annoying, too, when wrestling fans try to create, like, a reaction that's counter to the intent of the fiction.
Yeah,
but in live, but in real sports, there's no such thing, and people can do whatever they want.
Just because you said, like, anything on stage, right? So I'm thinking, like, concerts and stuff too. Like, people getting booed off of stage at a concert is, like,
yeah.
I think it's too far.
I think that's incredibly. I think that's incredibly mean, but, like, I don't think it's too far. Because I think that's like this. It's like comedy. If you're like, if you bomb, you bomb. And I know comedy is, the culture is, like, more toxic than it is for music, but like, I think it's along the same lines.
Yeah. So I'm just like, I don't have a problem with them, like, booing a dead guy. My biggest issue with this is, like, I feel like they should have put her on camera
first.
And yeah, then, because they should have known that the booing was going to happen. That's my only issue with the production.
That's all like those are all like second order issues. The first order issue is the booing, honestly. I understand what you mean. Like, you're not wrong.
Have a problem with the booing.
You're not wrong. But, no, I don't think it's most of us. I think a lot of us have, like, I think a lot of people have problems.
Most of us three.
In the chat. Okay, the majority. Wait. Could you explain why is it okay to boo a dead guy who's, like, not like a mass murderer?
Because they perceive him in this situation. Yeah. They perceive him as the reason why, right or wrong. Like, I'm not.
Yeah, right or wrong. Yeah. No.
I understand. NBA. I understand. You, like, yo, they're right. Like, this guy, fuck that guy.
No,
I'm not gonna say. But they perceive him as the reason for the club, for the team being shit for as long as it has been, regardless of whether they're right or wrong. In which case, dead or alive, he still did that shit. Fuck him.
Actually, it's interesting because you, so you don't think it's okay to boo your own team. And if they're honoring him for the positives he did for the team, wouldn't it be bad that they're booing to you?
Yeah, I don't understand that either. What is this? What is this inconsistency?
So here's the thing. He's not a player.
I was wondering if him being dead even just makes it better, because then he's definitely not a part of the organization anymore, or if it's just like a player thing. So you can boo like the front office and the back office, but you can't boo like the team, like the roster itself. Is what you're saying?
Can you boo a player who is bad for you and he comes back and he's playing for you, and like, can you boo him then? Is that fine then?
He left. He came back.
And people are booing him because he was bad.
Came back to play or came back to the team?
He's playing against you, but people are especially booing him because they remember.
Oh no, that's fine. That's fine. Fuck that guy.
He's a traitor. I don't get like the consistency here. It seems highly inconsistent in terms of like.
Ads is just saying you cannot boo anybody who is actively playing for you.
Yeah, that's all.
Unless
he's saying.
They're like a criminal.
But what does active playing status earn you? Why does that matter over everything else? I don't get it.
Because that's supposed to be your boys.
That's exactly. That's the boys. That's the homies.
Yeah.
You don't fuck with that connection.
The GM, because you want to win, because you think if you boo them, like, the thing's going to play worse. So it's not even about respect.
The GMs don't count, though. You can boo the GMs.
That's what I'm saying.
The only reason you don't want people to boo the player on the field is because you want to play better. So this is even about respect. This is about you want your team to play well.
Exactly.
It's not even about morals. It's about, like, what fans
No, I never said there was any morality involved in this.
Okay. Okay, that makes a lot more sense.
Classless because it's detrimental to the outcome.
Well, I mean, it's still classless, but like, it's
detrimental to the desired outcome.
Taking that out of it. Do you agree? Do you think it was at least a little bit so you would have stopped the fans from doing it? But do you agree with that? This was like morally somewhat ambiguous or wrong.
But I don't get why it's morally wrong. Is it because he's dead?
At all? The only reason?
Yeah, Wax just doesn't like booing dead people. I'm just like, fuck dead people. I don't care.
Dead people who weren't by consensus, like awful people in the world. I feel like it's kind of respectful to like just like not like shit on their legacy.
It's kind of I would say it's disrespectful. I will agree with that, but I don't think it's morally wrong. I think
if you're a war criminal, yes, then you don't deserve it.
Dead. They're the last person who's gonna care.
Yeah, I feel like the reason why like people got so caught in this, because like I think a lot of people would agree with you if they hadn't seen like his wife like being emotional about it. But like, you know, dead people have friends and family, so like if they're dead, like, you know, just have some respect.
Don't the dead people's friends and family know that people hate them? Or are they living
She knows that people were like, fuck you, to him
when he was walking down the street. I'm just going to say it, but it definitely happened. No. He was walking down the street and someone said, fuck you. And she was there.
No, but exactly. I'm saying like she knows that, and she's probably like living every day saying like, fuck that Michael Jordan guy for like spreading these like this propaganda about my husband.
Yeah, so she's allowed to boo him when he gets on the stage.
The Bulls organization gaslit her into believing that she wasn't going to get booed.
Yeah, that's the
They were like, we're going to show you and they're not going to boo. They're in the wrong.
I mean, yes, that probably happened, but that's like, I feel like that's like a secondary problem. Again, like as I said, there were so many practical problems with how this was executed. Like there are many executional problems, but the fundamental problem is with the fans. The fundamental problem.
I don't know. I think the fans, you know, they were within their lane.
Okay.
I think the fans have a right to be like, yo, we see you as the person who held back the organization from becoming what it should have been in their eyes anyways. And therefore, we're going to boo you at every chance.
Yeah, I think if you were going to say that the fans shouldn't boo because they have a biased view of the situation based on their limited knowledge, that's one thing. No. But to just say they shouldn't boo because he's dead, I don't agree with.
I feel like we're like touching upon like this is not even a sports thing. I feel like this is like, a common human decency thing. But it's like, come on, like, yeah, if like dead people, if they weren't like war criminals, come on, we can like not shit on the dead. No, okay, maybe not.
Cool point.
No, just don't put them there.
Sports exist outside of the realm of human decency.
Yeah, well, in that case, if you want to say that, then we should boo everyone. But
like, I'm not saying that
you would have like, booed someone
if Taylor Swift dies, right? Like, mm-hmm. Beyonce fans shouldn't like boo her at every mention of her or something like that, like craziness. But like in this like pocket that this happens,
no. Better analogy: if like Scooter Braun dies, like should like Taylor Swift fans show up to his like funeral and like be clapping? I mean, they probably will, they will, but they shouldn't.
But they will. If there was like a situation where there was like an award show and there happened to be fans there or something, and Taylor Swift was there, and they showed Scooter Braun on the screen after he died or something, I would expect booing.
Yeah, and they shouldn't, right? I know they will. No, I mean, but they shouldn't.
I don't know.
They shouldn't, but they will. I know they will, but they shouldn't.
Yeah, but I don't think it's like they shouldn't because he's dead. I think it's they shouldn't because they're only doing it because they're taking Taylor Swift's side.
What the fuck is? What are you even saying? Like it's like that's the only reason like that they're booing.
Yeah, but so this is so. But what I'm saying is like the situation is the exact same thing, right? If he's alive.
Right.
And I would say that even then, like it's more silly for them to boo. Like if he's alive and on stage, I think it's more silly for them to boo because they have like a limited view of the situation. They're just taking Taylor Swift's side because they're a fan of Taylor Swift. Then like, I think that is like the same, whether he's alive or dead. And like, I don't think just because, like, I don't think if he's alive, then it's okay. And if he's dead, it's not.
Okay, so you place no sanctity on the respective memory of the dead. You know what?
No.
So this is, I'm gonna take like a big left turn here. Do you think grave desecration is a crime?
Do I think grave desecration is a crime? I mean, it should be a crime.
Should it be a crime? Do you think it should
like
be
digging
a crime?
Up somebody's body?
Yeah,
probably. Or like, because it's like it's just weird.
I don't think there's anything morally reprehensible about it. You don't think booing someone who's dead is weird? At least a little bit weird.
No. I mean, it's just booing. You're not like taking their body. Their skeleton. That's weird. Like that's way weirder than just booing them.
What do you mean by
grave desecration? Like taking their body is grave desecration? What's the
status?
Grave and stuff like that.
Okay, so well, like well, graffiti.
I kind of meant like you know like Americans like bulldozing Native American like burial grounds or like whatever the idea of doing right now. Anyway,
okay, well that's different though.
Why is it different? It's great.
That's layered with like.
No, it's not. I mean, it is. Okay, it is layered, but the fundamental. So you're saying like the fundamental act. You don't care about it. The fundamental act of like.
Yeah, I'm not bothered by like if somebody paves over a cemetery.
Okay. Okay. So you just don't,
like the notion of it.
Okay. You don't place like some sort of like sanctity on like what is it? On graves, basically, on death.
No.
Okay. All right. I guess that you could think about it that way.
Like I think those people are big chillin'.
I'm personally I'm down with the bullying. I'm okay. Boom. Fuck them.
Okay. Fucking motherfuckers. Okay. Callous people.
Yeah. All right. I gotta go soon. Sometimes so let's
people just need to be booed, man. She didn't need to be booed, but like sometimes people need to be booed.
That's not her fault. That's not the fans' fault. That's the fucking management's fault.
Nah, it's the fans' fault. It's the fans' fault. Again, you guys are like prioritizing process over results.
What do you mean by that? Explain.
No, I'm just saying it's obviously the production fucked up by like leading to it happening, but the fans had this sort of vitriol in their hearts, and that's why the fans are the people who went wrong.
Yeah, but what you're saying is that everybody involved, you, me, ads, everybody that could possibly have seen it or put it together or been involved in it, knew what the outcome was going to be and still went through with it. And then you're like, nope, it's the fans' fault.
No. I'm saying like they're both at fault, but like I'm saying this is sort of like sort of pointing at like you know what I'm saying here. So yes,
it's like we agree that it should never have happened, but for two entirely different reasons. Because I'm just like it should never have gotten to that point.
No,
it should never have been allowed to happen.
No, I understand. I understand both reasons, but like in terms of like preventing it from ever happening, like in terms of like putting a highlight on what's like wrong with people today, it's the fans' fault. Because
like,
production,
it's like arguing that you shouldn't put like heat warnings on hot coffee cups.
No. That's completely different.
Like, you know somebody, well, it probably happened on the cup because somebody did burn themselves already, but it's like, you know somebody's going to burn themselves and try blame you.
No. It's like putting, like, a, like, don't be racist warning on a coffee cup and saying, like, hey, yeah, we can try to, like, put up, like, warnings saying telling people not to be racist, but if people are racist in their heart, then they're going to be racist in their heart. That's the fundamental issue. Which is like a very strange analogy,
I'm not sure about that one. I'm just talking about the lowest common denominator.
I stand by it.
Being the person who burns himself with a coffee, not the person who drinks coffee and is also racist.
Let's wrap up. So, songs of the week. I haven't found my song of the week. Has anyone got one? I'm just the most random one. So I'm going to do Moon Thief by Tatsuya Kitani. It's a good song. It's pretty popular in Japan. I don't know how to describe it. It's like J-pop with a bit of electronic flair in it. It's pretty good. So that's my song of the week, Moon Thief by Tatsuya Kitani.
All right.
Still can't edit. Wax his fucking dog.
What happened? Oh, you can't edit? God damn it. I thought I gave it to you guys.
If you sent it again, I didn't click it.
While you're doing I'll just go with my song. My song,
Change it.
It was a Spotify DJ. You know, I've been using it a little bit. The AI DJ X or whatever his name is.
Oh, I forgot that existed.
he gave me a song that I'd never heard of. I'd never heard before. But apparently, it's her debut single or something like that from like 2016. It's Noah Cyrus and Labyrinth, Make Me Cry. You know, I was just listening to it and, you know, it stuck with me a little bit based on I didn't know who it was at the time because it was like on my phone and my phone's in my pocket, but I remembered a line from it and looked it up. It's probably mostly Labyrinth's production on it that I enjoy, but you know, that's what I'm going with.
All right. My song is the main theme from Godzilla versus King Kong, the 1960s film. This is from? Sorry. Yeah. In any case, my last recommendation was from Godzilla, but Godzilla versus King Kong. Is this from like the '60s, I think, or maybe even the '50s? And I was like, oh shit, this song's like it also holds up very well. Ifukube is pretty good movie composer.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah. Got some classics. You know what I was going to say? Okay, my observation was, like, this really reminded me of, like, all of, like, the ominous chanting music we've heard in, like, films from, like, I don't know, the 50s onward. So I want to think that this was, like, the this was the origin. This is just, like, this is the epitome of ominous, like, foreign language chanting. And it's Latin these days, but this was, like, I think it's like some sort of Polynesian language. So more, so credit to this guy for using random language.
Which one is it? There's a bunch on this album.
I will link a thing here. One second.
Okay, and that's all three of our songs. Peace.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to another week of Ads rants about things and Wax makes bad analogies. Pete does stuff.
Yeah.
It's a good way to describe it. Fuck Manchester City. I'd boo Pep even if he died. And that's it for the week. We'll see you next week. If you want to support us monetarily, go to www. How many W's did I say there? Probably one too many. You know how many W's.
Yeah, that's great.
.coffee, that's ko-fi.com/thejujus. We can support us monetarily. And otherwise, we'll see you next week, possibly. I don't know.